Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tip Balls Podcast. I am your host, Sam Randazzo. And I am joined by my rather joyous co-host. To my right, it's the one and only Uncle Sam.
Good evening.
Unfortunately, Zolo cannot be with us today. Some prior obligations.
Okay.
But he is here with us in spirit because today is a massive, massive show for us.
Blessed.
But first, Uncle Sam, how are you today?
Good. I'm good. Living the dream.
High points, low points, pits, peaks of today? The high point will come in a few minutes.
High point will come in a few minutes. Low point, Garden City Water, or Westland Water Department yesterday.
Yeah, and if you check out our Instagram, we managed to encapsulate your rant.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
No, it's a good thing.
I'm sure they're going to shut my water off now.
That, guess what? Then at least we'll have proof when we take it to the Michigan Supreme Court.
When I get a hold of Point Legal.
So some of you may be looking for us to be live right now, which unfortunately we're not. And some of you may be looking for our AFC South offseason recap, which unfortunately you're not going to get until Monday. We have an interview today. Our second interview of season three with somebody who is near and dear to all Lions fans' hearts. You may know him from Hard Knocks. You may know him from Penn State. You may know him as an Oakland Raider, but we know him as Lions superback Jason Kabinda. We are going to talk to him about a multitude of things. We're going to talk to him about his high school years. We're going to talk to him about being a linebacker at Penn State.
Which linebacker is you, baby.
Linebacker you. Very successful in his years at Penn State. Obviously, in the NFL. Very successful.
Yes.
So we're going to talk to him. He was with he's been with the Lions through the Patricia years. He transitioned into the Campbell.
Yeah, there's not many guys that live to tell that story.
Exactly. So we're really, really excited about that. But don't worry, we're going to get back Monday and we will be with you guys to talk all the AFC South you guys could possibly stand to hear. Outside of that, I think we should just jump right into
Let's jump in.
We've kept them waiting long enough.
Yeah. I don't want to waste his time.
Absolutely not. So here you go. Here is our very nice conversation with Lions fullback, linebacker, superback, all around great guy, Jason Kabinda. So without further ado, I wanted to introduce a very, very special guest. One that is close to the Lions fans' heart. He was on Hard Knocks. He was a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. If you are a Penn State football fan, which unfortunately we aren't here, but today we are going to talk about it a little bit.
I am.
You
linebacker
are?
You, baby. Linebacker you.
Yes, sir.
I would like to introduce fullback, running back, superback, linebacker, pretty much a guy that can do it all, Jason Kabinda.
How we doing, guys? Man, appreciate y'all having me on, man. That was quite the intro.
I like to get carried away with the intros. I like to make sure everybody knows just who they're dealing with here. And for a guy who coined the term super back, you deserve an intro like
absolutely.
That 100%.
I love it. You add the Bruce Buffer voice to you. You got some legendary stuff there.
You know, you're not the first person to say that. I might have missed my calling. Maybe I should be on like Inside of Rings doing this that yeah, kind of stuff.
I like it.
Doing the buffer call.
Get me riled up, man.
Jason Kabinda, former Nittany Lion, former Las Vegas, or excuse me, it was before the move, Oakland Raider, the true black hole, and Detroit Lion here with us today. We're going to break down a whole lot of stuff, but I wanted to start off with your heritage and what it meant to you and how it kind of groomed you into the NFL player you are today. Your roots trace back to Cameroon, even though you were born in California, I believe. Yeah. How did that heritage impact you, and what did you take from your childhood that led you to be the awesome, successful NFL star that you are today?
That is a great question. You know, Cameroon has had a big impact on my life and where my parents came from, where my sisters grew up. Me and my sisters have a big age gap, like 8-9 years. So they grew up in Cameroon and really experienced that. My mom was pregnant with me on the way here. And there's just certain things about the values, whether it's respect, whether it is like it takes a village to raise a child. Like one thing about our culture is like growing up, if you're not a lawyer or a doctor or you know, something of that nature, like we're kind of looked at like, okay, like, or what are you doing with your life? Like I told my mama, like I wanted to play football, like to her, to my dad, football it's just a hobby. It's like, that's not something you can do professionally or make money or do anything, you know, of any great nature, but that's just, you know, their thinking and stuff. So as it became more and more serious, it's really interesting to see my parents really like, see like, dang, like this is something that, you know, you could really, once it comes to scholarships and going to school for free and things of that nature, but just from things they've instilled in me, I just feel like it keeps me very humble and super grounded because like at the end of the day, I know exactly what my life could be like, where I could be, how I could be starved of opportunities and just be put in situations where things can just be unfortunate. And I think those kinds of thoughts keep me grounded, keep me humble, keep me hungry and keep me really appreciative and grateful for being here in America in general. So yeah, I mean, even growing up until I started playing sports, seriously, like 8th, 9th grade, like for the most part, we really just hung out with cousins, aunties, uncles, people that my parents knew, people who had already come here, Nigerians, Cameroonians, like that's all I grew around besides going to school. Like when it came to after school occasions, weekends, cookouts, you know, whatever the case may have been. So there's a large amount of us here in Maryland. So I grew up coming to Maryland all the time on the weekends. I grew up in Jersey, but we would drive up here all the time and be around family and stuff. So it definitely impacted me a ton in who I am. But I truly do feel like it makes me a very well-rounded individual.
No, with a lot of perspective. And it seems like that translated to the field too, but even outside of that, you know, I noticed you're very outspoken on Twitter about things that like matter to you. And, you know, that I feel like your heritage truly instilled a value in you where, like you said, respect and family and like morals that get forgotten a lot in today's day and age are really deep rooted to you. And I, you know, that there needs to be an emphasis on that, especially today when people get lost in the sauce and it's so easy when you reach the level that especially you have to no longer be humble and to take for granted what we do have. But no, it's awesome. And really says a lot about your character that you stayed true to those values. So 100%.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of that is truly just keeping God at the center of everything that you do. I think it, especially in America, I truly feel like it can be very easy to get attached to earthly, worldly things and not godly, holy things. Get caught up in your flesh and who you are, who you've become, what career, how high up you've climbed the ladder, how much money you have, whatever it is. You know, I think it is easy here in this country to fall down that path and make those things bigger than what they are. That's what I think we need to do is just get back to who we are. You know, I feel like growing up, we were about, and it doesn't matter whether you're Christian, Hindu, it really doesn't matter, Muslim, but having that sense of a greater thing, you know, because that's what keeps you away from the self and everything's about you and about self at the end of the day. So
100%. Yeah. It's easy to kind of keep that mindset when you believe in something bigger than you. And I know I mentioned it before, but if you don't follow him on Twitter, we're going to plug it in here because I don't have the exact handle on it. But I was going through your Twitter today and I loved it. You are as real as it gets on there. And I suggest everybody go follow you on there.
I know. I had people tell me to chill out all the time, but it's like, it's what I think is right. You know,
no, speak your mind, man. 100%. That's the way to do it. Not enough people do in this day and age. I wanted to jump down to your years in high school, Hunterdon Central, out there in New Jersey. You were quite the successful running back. Over 3,000 yards in 3 years, 47 touchdowns. I mean, you kind of took the world by storm, won a championship during your time in high school. How formative was that? Were those high school years like in getting you to college? What was the process like going from high school to college? What ultimately made you decide on Penn State as, you know, Big Ten football, all of the lights that come with it? What was that transition from high school to college like?
The glory days, man. You did your research on OC, man. 100 Central. Oh, yeah. You know, high school football, man, that's like football at its purest, man. There's nothing better than those Friday night lights. I'll tell you what, you know, because you got a bunch of dudes on your team who at the end of the day, when it's over, they're never going to play football again. Yeah. They're really just there to be with the boys, hang out, have fun, work hard. You know, it's a special bond. So I appreciate high school a lot. And it shaped me and shaped my work ethic a lot. I think it was like my sophomore year of high school where I felt like I really really made the full commitment and decision to give everything to football. In terms of never missing a workout, extra time, the weight room, on the field, you know, whatever the case may be, but just really being about sacrifice. And I feel like you saw that in my production, my sophomore and my junior year in high school. But in terms of the transition from high school to college and kind of picking Penn State, I felt like Penn State gave me the best blend of everything. From being able to go to school out big time in academics, going to school out big time in football, feeling like I wanted to go to a big school. So size mattered to me. Penn State's a big school, one of the largest alumni networks in the world, honestly. And then from a social standpoint, you know, a place that I know I'd still be able to kind of disconnect and have fun and stuff. And I mean, it was such a great decision. I felt like a lot of the values there mattered to me and the people there as well. You know, meant a lot to me. So I definitely made the right choice. And then obviously being able to go play linebacker at LBU, I mean, what more could you ask for, you know? To be able to carry on that tradition, man, is one of the greatest honors of my life. Everybody knows about freaking Penn State linebackers, man. If you know college football from the dog days all the way up, you know, they just had so many greats over the years. And you've known about
you were pretty successful as a linebacker there. What made you want to switch positions? What made you do that?
Honestly, it was more so a position of need on the team. To be honest, we had a fullback that, you know, I believe they drafted. And, you know, he was kind of having some injury things going on during camp and stuff. And I think they were nervous about, you know, whether he'd be able to pan out for the season, you know, put together a healthy season and stuff. And I used to joke around with the running back coaches, like, man, y'all don't got any dogs over there. You know, like, I'll be over there talking about, like, y'all don't got no dogs over there for real. It was Coach Caskey, and he was like, all right, well, he said, why don't you come over here then? I said, look, it was really just, we were just kind of messing around, you know. And then the next day, it was like before practice, before we like going to meetings or whatever, I got pulled aside. My coach, he's like, hey, like during one of the indie drills today, or not even indie, like either the one-on-ones or some, we used to do these 3-on-3 kind of like Oklahoma type of deals. And he's like, you know, when we do these drills, I'm going to want you to come over here, you know, on the offensive side and, you know, do some fullback work. I say, cool, whatever. Boom, went over there. Like, it was like the first play. I don't remember who it was, but I smashed somebody. Kind of like, whoa. Okay, we might have something here. And then it just developed into like the next day, I ended up taking a few reps on offense and then doing the rest of the practice on defense. And like by the time the end of camp happened, I had won the job and they wanted me to play fullback. And it kind of just, I just took it from there, honestly.
So obviously when you took it from there, you must have taken it to a pretty high level. 9th all time Penn State tackles. I believe it was 6 sacks, 16 tackles for loss. So very successful linebacker from Linebacker U. Successful enough that they made you a captain, which I feel like being a captain under James Franklin at Penn State was kind of an honor. Was there any of the coaches there that stood out to you specifically that really helped you transition into and take on that leadership role and really become a leader of the team?
Yeah. Coach Pry, for sure. You know, he was my linebacker coach while I was there. Man, Coach Pry was just really about his business, really about doing things the right way, really process-oriented. So I learned a lot of those things from him, really about attacking each day, you know, not looking ahead. And I know we read these, like, motivational books, and we read these, how to be successful, and woo-dee-woo, and, like, you hear that kind of stuff all the time. Be about the process, you know, take things day by day, like, whatever, but, like, it's not easy to do that on a daily basis and truly commit yourself to doing that. It's not an easy thing. That's why all that stuff is words. Everybody knows what to do. It's the doing it part that's hard. Everybody knows that, you know? So
right.
He's a guy who really taught me those kinds of things and how to be detailed and, you know, what it looks like to really feel like you emptied out the tank, you know? So I just felt like he leveled me up as a man while I was at Penn State, but. There's a lot of coaches I can say that about, man. Coach Deej, our strength coach as well. I mean, you guys know about Penn State strength and conditioning. I feel like we have like four or five like freak athletes in every combine every year, yep. Man. Stuff they're doing over there, man. They do a really great job with the strength and conditioning. So those winter workouts, man, they were no joke, man. You were leaving your dorm room about 4:20 in the morning, walking over. It's dark outside.
The boys from the men.
Got to get 15 minutes in the hot tub just to get your body awake, man. It was real. It was real, man.
Were there any players in college that, you know, made you a better player that you, you know, I don't want to say hated going up against, but like guys who challenged you every single day in practice?
One guy who I would say influenced my game a lot was Mike Hall. Mike Hall was a dog. Straight up. I mean, this dude didn't miss tackles, did everything right, studied film. Like, he just did everything right. Wasn't any crazy physically imposing player. He was super strong, you know, but, like, from an eye test perspective, he wasn't the guy that you're going to look at and think, like, oh, man, this dude won the buckets. Like, Mike Hall was so good, so disciplined. He didn't say too much. When he did speak, everybody listened. You know, one of those kind of guys. And I think another guy who I would say challenged me, obviously on the opposite side of the ball, would be Saquon. I mean, dude was just freaky. Ain't no other way to put it. I mean, a 230-pound back that moves like he's 180. That's the only way I can put it. So he as well. And then, I mean, not only the talent, but he has a work ethic to match the talent. And I think that's what makes Say so great. Sometimes you have guys who have that type of God-given talent, but they don't attack it with that same mentality as the amount of talent they're given, you know? And he's somebody who, in my opinion, really does that.
Your junior year, you guys won the Big Ten championship, if I'm correct.
Yes, sir.
And you also had a Rose Bowl appearance that year. What was that year like? You guys ended up going 11-2 during the regular season. And I feel like that was like, at least in my recent memory, Penn State was just everywhere. What were the lights like that year? What was that dream season like? And what was it like? What was the atmosphere like when you were playing in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, man, that was definitely one of my greatest football years of my life, for sure. Everybody knows about Penn State, you know, coming out of the dark days and all that stuff. You know, we were very just above average. You know, after the shit with Joe Pa and Sandusky went down and all that. So being like those couple classes above and coming in, it's like we were far enough removed where like that kind of didn't affect us in that sense. But we were still suffering from the repercussions of that stuff, because I think my freshman year, we had 46 scholarships on our roster.
Wow.
And you have normally on a Division I FBS football team, you know, we have 85 scholarships. We had 46.
That's crazy.
We used to call our walk-ons run-ons because they would come in and play. Like, literally, wow. We called them
run-ons. Choice, yeah.
That's how low a scholarship we had, you know? And, like, I mean, we probably had, what, a 7-5 and, like, an 8-5 season, pretty much average, you know? But to not even have a losing season and then junior year come in, start the year off 2-2, you know, everything's in doubt. Again, what kind of year are we about to have? You know, we were injured as hell. I think I missed 5 games that year, out with a thumb. You know, we lost our starting linebacker, B-Bell. I mean, it was injuries everywhere and stuff. Lost a crazy game to Michigan. And I remember that week, we literally took the tape and buried it. and said, that's never going to happen again. And then just we went on a streak after that. Minnesota was a gutsy game, a game we should have for sure won. We had to win in like OT, you know. So, I mean, it was just a gutsy season. We ended up being labeled the second half team. And the belief factor after we buried that Michigan tape and the level of accountability, I think the best teams are player-led teams when things happen that aren't up to the standard and the coach doesn't have to say not a word. Those are the best teams. Because when the players want it that much and they refuse for it to not be at that standard, whether it's a drill, whether it's a, you know, whatever it is, practice, whether how you handle yourselves at the hotel, cleaning up after yourselves, being respectful, all everything. Those are the best teams. And I truly felt like the accountability level really raised to the roof after that Michigan game. And I mean, we went on a run. Ohio State came in, number two team, the nation, we're unranked. This is the get over the hump game, you know? And it was gutsy. We're down, I forget what we were down, 21-3, I think. Yeah, I think it might have been 21-3 or something, like we were down. Second half, come back. We have to kick six. I mean, that game was nuts. Beat them. That was the first time I was a part of a game where the whole crowd rushes the field. Like, you know, it was surreal. Wide out. We had some great moments that season. That Rose Bowl to this day probably stings me. That's one of my most painful losses in my career of sports. But, yeah.
That was against USC in the Rose Bowl, yeah. Correct?
USC, Rose Bowl, crazy game. We're up 12, like 4 minutes to go. They walked down Juju Smith-Schuster with three DPIs in a row. They score. Like, it was just crazy.
It was really close, wasn't it, I remember correctly?
It was a walk-off field goal. They won with a walk-off field goal on that last drive on, like, three DPIs to win the game.
One of those heartbreakers. That I feel like that just never leaves. Yeah, but so moving on out of college. You ended up starting your career in Oakland. It was before Oakland. The Raiders had made the move to Vegas. What was that like? Your first year coming out of college, transitioning into the NFL. John Gruden was the head coach there. You had Reggie McKenzie as the GM who first brought you in. Oakland was known the black hole, the craziest fans. What was that like? And at that point, you had transitioned back from linebacker to fullback. How did that all happen?
In Oakland?
Yes.
Yeah, so in Oakland, I was still linebacker. I didn't play linebacker till my third year in the league. So we're about a year. I played a year of defense in Detroit. Then that next year, I moved to fullback.
Okay, so still fullback in Oakland. Still linebacker in Oakland. Yep, yep. Correct.
Oakland was cool, man. Playing under John Gruden was really cool. You know, somewhat one of those coaches that has that aura, you know, he's one of those guys where exactly what you see, that's exactly what he is, you know, a person just lives, breathes, eats football, kind of guy who would probably sleep at the facility if he could, you know. Oakland was dope. It sucked losing, obviously, but that was my first experience in the NFL at all. I felt like I was just very thankful, very locked in, very much so in a mindset, just trying to get better, you know, as a rookie. Playing with Marshawn Lynch was dope, man. He was probably one of my favorite teammates. Just a great dude overall. Derek Carr as well, man. It was a great group of guys, tough coaches. The Bay is different. The Bay is expensive. The Bay is super expensive, man. Hard Knocks. I mean, it was a lot, honestly.
Did you go through Hard Knocks in Oakland?
Yeah, I did Hard Knocks twice.
Yeah, no, Hard Knocks.
Oakland, I had Hard Knocks in Detroit.
Huh. Yeah. What was that? What was the difference between Hard Knocks in Oakland and Hard Knocks in Detroit?
That's a good question. It was definitely different for me because the Hard Knocks in Detroit, I was hurt a majority of camp. I'd had a surgery like on both of my ankles right before that season started. But like in terms of the cameras, I feel like I'm trying to think who had more access, you know, because the cameras in your face, no matter what, like they're there, you know, practice, meeting rooms, all that stuff, you know. But honestly, there's probably more access in Oakland. than Detroit. I feel like, you know, Dan tries to run as tight a ship as possible. I don't think he tries to be an a-hole at all, but I just think Dan understands what is the certain areas about football that are just sacred, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I, that's really what it is. So I would say Oakland probably had more access than Detroit, but I think both of them were good. I honestly didn't really watch either of them, but I heard that both of them were really good. Detroit was really cool. I feel like that's when like everyone fell in love with Dan as a coach, you know, just who he was. I thought that was cool. Everybody got to peek into who Dan is because, I mean, he's a great coach, man, great leader for us. And, you know, we all really rallied around him and his confidence and belief in us and stuff. Man, he's a great coach.
So I definitely want to touch more on that. But before we leave the Hard Knocks topic, because you have actually been through two, what are the fundamental differences between, because I know that they say it's as real as it gets, but I know it can't be. What are the differences between a Hard Knocks training camp and a normal training camp when there are no cameras around? Are there any differences? What is the difference?
Oh, man.
I know at the end of the day, they can't be identical.
Let's just say, man, you'll have certain people that can do a little bit too much, and you can tell they're doing too much because there's cameras around. And I'll just leave it at that.
You guys,
whether that's players yeah, or that's coaches, in terms of coaches disciplining players, whatever the case may be, that happens. That's what I'll say.
Noted.
It's hard as hell, no matter what.
Right. No, I hear you. Noted. So when you first came to Detroit, obviously we are from Detroit, Lions fans. We need to touch on the Patricia era. And I know we're not here to step on anybody's toes. What was the atmosphere like when you first came to Detroit during the Patricia era, moving from the Bay Area to Detroit, even for you personally? I want to hear what that was like, but also what was the aura in the Lions facility like under the Patricia era when you first got here?
Man, those were some of my toughest football years, I'll say. I'll say that it's the most losing I've ever done in my life. It was they were my toughest years playing football. And we just very much so were trying to be turned into the Patriots. Very much so a more is more mentality. And that's good when you're winning. When you're more is more mentality and guys are freaking working their asses off every day, running hills, extra conditioning, whatever, extra everything, and it doesn't result in winning, it's not easy to win the locker room over. And I think that's kind of what made Detroit during those, my first three years, right? Yeah, my first 3 years, really tough, to be completely honest with you. And Detroit's a tough place. It's a football city. I mean, do we have some diehard Detroit fans? No lie. Like these people have been through it and stick beside us at every turn, you know? So I just think at the end of the day, when it comes to the NFL, no matter how serious it is, no matter the fact that, yeah, it's a job and all those things, at the end of the day, you can never take the fun or the kid out of any of us. Because at the end of the day, that's when we fell in love with this game. That's what the majority of us all got to this point because of the love of the game, the love of the grind, the want and commitment to wanting to be the best player and reach whatever your potential inside you was. That's why we're here, because that level of determination is special. So when you take away from the love of it and the fun of it, it makes the NFL very tough.
Yeah, see, and just to touch on that again, I feel like it's, I mean, especially in football, where it's a job that you have to love to be at the top of it. In anything you're doing in life, if you lose your passion for it and your love for it's taken away, you're obviously not going to get a good result. And I think that it was kind of like the rudderless ship that everybody was trying to push. And at a certain point, you couldn't get any more out of out of them. And I hear you, because a lot of people did say that they were trying to turn the Lions into the Patriots, and Patricia being a Patriots product, it makes sense. It seems like nobody in New England really loved football or loved being there. So that all makes perfect sense to me.
I mean, you can ask any players that have come from Patriots coaches that have gone to teams, and that's just kind of the consensus of what it is.
Yeah, it's a
it's funny because everybody tries to emulate that. Everybody tries to emulate that. All these other coaches that were for the Patriots try to emulate that same thing, and it's
still a chicken,
been just not successful.
Yeah, and a lot of them just take it to a further degree in an attempt to establish it. I think that's what makes it tough.
Yes.
Not all guys are built for that, to be completely honest. It takes a different type of player, I think, you know, for Patriots culture. And like, I went to Penn State, like I feel like I was very much so built for that. But not all guys are built for that level of discipline and constant seriousness, and sometimes can feel like robotic, honestly. So, yeah.
So what now, going from that to Dan Campbell, what was that like to see a guy as passionate? Is this guy really as passionate as we've seen out of him? It looked like when he loses, he just wants to lose his mind.
Dan hates losing, man. He freaking hates losing, but super competitive, special guy. Obviously played 10 years in the league, got a successful career, and I think that separates him a lot, you know, when it comes to relatability, when it comes to being a player's coach, when it comes to getting it. There's certain things that about the NFL, you know, that are really tough, that unless you're in those shoes, that you truly, you know, understand. So knowing that Dan's been in our shoes, and that helps a lot. And then, you know, you talk about passion, you know, love for the game, loves his players, you know, feel like he'd do anything for us, wants nothing but success for us, for everybody. Just a great leader, overall, honestly. Just the way he carries himself, like the ultimate football coach, like a guy you'd want to walk into war with, you know, the Army general, you know, that's who he is, man. So freaking huge, yoked up, you know, like, I don't think there's a coach in the league that will stand a chance against Dan. I'm not even going to lie. I'm trying to think.
No,
I don't know, man.
It's funny because Uncle Sam says out of everybody in the NFL, the one guy I would want to sit and drink beer with is Dan Campbell.
That's
and it's
it.
Like, that's like the truest thing ever.
That's the one guy I would like to sit and drink with.
I think there's a quote out there. I think Jared might have been asked if like Dan likes to golf something. And I think Jared was like, you know, golf might be like too slow for Dan. I think Dan caught wind of it and was like, I mean, as long as there's beers, I think it'd be plenty of fun or something like that.
That's the thing. Like Dan Campbell seems like such a good guy, such a player's coach. Like he said, was in the league, relatable versus the former regime here. I think that definitely had probably the biggest impact of all, but that first year under the Campbell era was not all that successful. What changed after year one to obviously get you guys into a winning attitude? There was 9 games won in year two, and then obviously we got to touch on this season, but what changed from year one to year two? Did guys just start to buy in more, or what was the big change?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I feel like that year after, I felt like the team was still somewhat like traumatized from that era, in a sense. Like, we lost so many close games. Like, and I understand, like, the NFL, probably 70% of games are close games in the NFL. That's why there's a parity that there is. But I'm talking like heartbreaker moments, NFL's longest field goal to ever in history to beat us. You know, like, we had so many moments like that where 16 seconds left, we give them the ball back and miraculously they get in field goal range. You know what I mean? Like, so I honestly feel like that first year of guys, like when Dan came in, obviously he had to come in and establish the culture and those kinds of things. But we really needed to, we were still somewhat used to losing in a sense, you know? I don't know how else to say it. There was just renewed energy that was kind of, you know, boosted into organization when Dan got here. And I feel like he really, like, got us out of that and got that monkey off of our back. Because it starts mental first. And you could just tell there was just something in the air that was just still kind of lingering there. And going into that second year, you know, as when I really felt like we grew as a team a lot. Really wish we'd made the playoffs. Like, I feel like we would have made that a run that year too, but.
Yeah, no. And obviously then this year, this was the best year of football probably ever. I mean,
since I can remember.
In my lifetime. Yeah, you're probably the only one who can remember it. But like this year seemed to be somewhat magical right up until the second half of the NFC Championship. But I don't want to talk about that. Either way, this year was different and it felt different. And even with the draft being downtown this week and we were down there, the buzz and the fire for this team, which even you said during the worst years was always there.
Yeah.
Seems to be on 100 right now. What was this year like as a Detroit Lion? The first year where everybody was like, oh my gosh, they're actually like, this is actually for real. This is happening. What was that like?
It was special. It was very, very special. I'll tell you what, like, our LA Rams game, that first playoff game that we had at Ford Field, there were moments during that game where I legitimately couldn't hear my own voice in my own head. It was so loud. Like, it was like, I mean, it was literally people who had been waiting their entire life for that moment. And you could feel the energy in that. That was super special. That was like Big Ten Championship at Penn State special from a standpoint of like reviving a fan base. That's what it felt like. Not that they ever died, you know, Detroit Lions fans go hard, but there's a certain level of pride you get when you win the NFC North, when you go to the NFC Championship. You know, there's a certain level of pride that you carry and wear your Detroit Lions gear in, you know, that I feel like the fan base needed and that they got.
So you were a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee during your time in Detroit. So obviously, with that being said, charity and helping other people are special to you. What are some things or some charities or some organizations that you believe in that, like, what are some causes that mean the most to you?
To me, I would say my biggest concern is with the kids. You know, like, we should all, as adults, as growing adults who are going to be, you know, fathers, mothers, granddads, grandmas, like, we need to take care of the kids and make sure that we put them in position. I don't really have any one singular cause I can morph all of that into, but at the end of the day, man, it's about opportunity. And everybody should have opportunity. Everybody should have the opportunity to work hard, to find what they're good at, to excel, to be pushed by their environment and not their environment be a prison. Everybody deserves that. Every kid deserves that. Yeah, you know, we've done a ton of work in a lot of Detroit, you know, schools that are underserved, neighborhoods that are underserved, kids that wouldn't have the opportunity to have this, whether it's technology, STEM, books, all kinds of things, man. And I think one of the greatest things that, you know, we tried to do while I was there, my 5 years in Detroit, was really trying to create an initiative in which these kids have a reason to do well, where they do well and they're rewarded, whether it's field trips or it was prizes. I mean, we had them write essays. I mean, we had so many things, but writing essays, game contests. We had attendance awards. We had awards that accumulated all of those things between grades, attendance, doing the right thing, you know, being the right character, being the right, you know, person and being a role model in the classroom and things of that nature. And we would take them on field trips. We had the teachers involved and would have them nominate these kids. And, you know, it's all a group effort. You know, we tried to loop in as many people as we can. I have a big shout out to Kathleen Laporte, who helped me a ton with the organization Athletes for Charity. And she, you know, we just got to work. I reached out to her and told her, you know, like, I want to feel like whenever I leave here that I made an impact, I left this place better than when I found it. And we targeted a bunch of schools and went to work and started with small, just STEM readings. I mean, went virtual when COVID happened and we were doing readings with the kids. And we realized after some time, like maybe 5-6 months of reading books with these kids, when they started reading with us and we were like, yo, like, they're really getting a lot better. Like, you know, and that's what it is, man. You just got to put time into these kids. So you never know what just an hour of your time, especially as an NFL player, what that could do for a kid. I didn't meet any NFL players when I was a kid, and I know I would have been geeked, you know, like I would have been so happy and, you know, inspired. You never know. And representation, you know, matters. Seeing people that look like them being in higher positions, that helps too. Cause they got to see themselves to imagine themselves being in those shoes. That's important. So, yeah.
Before we end, I have a couple rapid fire questions that I'd love to ask you that I've asked everybody we've interviewed here. Just because I think it really lets us get to know you a little bit better. What's dad life like? Coming from a young guy and coming from a guy who has four daughters, what is dad life like in the NFL? How do you manage it all?
Man, it is different. That's what I'll say. A lot less golf. Well, I mean, I think those are the things that a lot of people don't realize, like, that go on behind the scenes in the NFL. Like, I have a spot in Florida, you know, and I go back and forth from up north to down south to be there and do these things because you don't want to be moving a baby around. You don't know where you're going to be next year. You're a free agent. You know, a lot of things can be put in limbo, you know, so it can be hard to find stability. But I mean, dad life is different. Not a whole lot of sleep, man, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying these moments as they're coming. And, you know, having a daughter and being a girl dad is different. I was dying for a boy and then realized that a girl's probably what I needed in my life the most to actually help me, you know, think of things differently. And, you know, it's easy when you think of having a son, you know exactly what you want to do with him. You want to put a football in his hand. You want to go do this and teach him that. But then when it's a girl, you're like, whoa, like, you know, I hadn't given that too much thought, you know? So it's an opportunity for growth from that perspective. So it's been good, man. I've learned a lot.
Believe me, you're going to be better off because of that. You're going to have four women taking care of you your whole life.
Relax.
Your whole life.
Relax.
what's your favorite thing to do in your downtime, if you got any? I know you probably are a very busy dude, but what's like your favorite thing to do? Is it golf? I know you've mentioned it a couple times.
Right now, it is definitely golf, without a question. I have been golfing my butt off. I have the itch. I got the bug. I'm absolutely addicted. I'm probably going to join a club soon. So I'm getting serious with it, man. I'm loving the game. It's teaching me a lot of patience, teaching me a lot of different things. I feel like golf is so much more like the very opposite of football. Now, football is all like, and go and explosion. And golf is calm. It's smooth. You know, it's a consistency. It's more in your head than anything else. So teaching me a lot, man. I'm loving the sport of golf.
If you could give 18-year-old you any one piece of advice, what would it be?
Any piece of advice.
18-year-old you.
Man, I would just say, like, I put, at that age especially, like, I put so much pressure on myself. I feel like I made things harder than I need. I was doing everything that I could. The work ethic was there. You know, I had belief in myself. Like, it would just be to keep going and not to think too much, not to stress out too much. Like, I definitely felt a lot of pressure as a kid, even in college, you know, that I wasn't necessarily prepared to handle yet. And that took really learning how to lean on God in the right ways and stuff like that. But that's probably what I would say. Just at the end of the day, man, it's the game that you love, the game you've always loved. Don't ever lose that 10-year-old you that went out there and played football for the first time.
Those are great words to live by.
That's it. Words of wisdom.
Last but not least, what's next for Jason Gabinda?
Great question, man. And I got a short answer for you. We shall see.
I love that. I absolutely love that. That's it. Those, you know what? Those we shall see sometimes are the most promising things.
Yes.
That's the whole thing. You never know what's coming next. I want to thank you so much. And if there's anything you want to add and share with our viewers, I would love to hear it.
Yes, actually, I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course.
I'll be franchising a VO med spa that'll be opening in November next year out in Fairfax, Virginia. So if you're ever trying to treat your girl out to something, I know probably got a lot of male viewers. I know a med spa isn't necessarily, it might not be their first place, even though we do have male customers as well. Just to plug their girls in, man, hydrofacials, laser treatment, laser hair removal, Botox, lip fillers, everything you could really imagine, the IVs, infusions, all that stuff, age-defying formulas, all that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited about, you know, that business. So I'm going to plug that up. That's VO Med Spa, V-I-O Med Spa.
They're 100%.
Flexible. See you soon.
Listen, we're going to put in, you guys need to go follow Jason on everything, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. We're going to make sure that's in right here. Also, definitely go check out the med spa, because I'll be honest with you, if I wasn't terrified of needles, I would be getting those IVs every day just to bring me back to life every morning. I've looked into it, but I just can't get past the needles. But
I hear you.
I want to thank you a million times over for coming and spending some time with us, giving us a look into your life, giving us a look into the NFL a little bit. And the next time you are in town, you definitely need to come see us, come hang out with us for an afternoon, because it would be a great time. But I want to thank you again for spending some time with us today.
Appreciate you guys.
It's been our pleasure having you on. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. You guys are awesome, man. Appreciate having the time.
Great meeting you. Well, I must say, that was great. I had a lot of fun.
I see why he was nominated for NFL Man of the Year.
Walter Payton Man of the Year.
The guy's true blue.
Should have won. In my opinion,
he should have
won. Who won in 2021? Because
I don't even fucking know, but it was probably rigged. Just because he was lying, nobody wanted to give him any credit.
Andrew Whitworth. Good dude.
We can't complain. He's a nice
good dude. But
he's a good dude too.
Listen,
he's a good guy. it's hard to pick and choose on that.
It should have been our guy.
Hey, yeah.
Should have been our guy. Hopefully, he considers himself a friend of the pod now. Love to have him back.
We would love to have him when you're in town. Come by and see us.
Yeah, sorry if we took up too much of your time.
Yeah, I know he had a flight to catch.
He had a flight to catch.
Feel bad,
but
I feel bad.
But I had a great time talking to him.
I did too. He was very, very genuine. I like to see guys that are...
Tell it like it is.
That come in and tell it like it is, and they're being honest about it. And that makes for great interviews and great
show.
It just makes for a great show.
Without question. Go find him on Instagram and Twitter. We're going to put it back in here.
What is it? Instagram? His Instagram.
His Twitter. Banging. His Instagram is big. My man takes great pictures, I must say.
Yeah.
Takes great pictures. But his Twitter, fantastic. Truly a guy who tells it like it is. And also, we're gonna put in the website for the med spa here. If you're in Virginia, and you know, Mother's Day is right around the corner.
There you go. You gotta give
Hook
your mom
up.
Something. That,
Hook him up.
That's it.
So we want to just thank Jason again for spending some time with us today. Truly great guy. Great football player. Cannot wait to see what's next for him.
I truly hope that everything that's going on with him continues, because he's a genuinely good guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He deserves it.
100%. Deserves everything he has.
Yep.
With that being said, you should follow Jason on all the socials, but guess what? You should also follow us. Instagram and Twitter at TipBalls. TikTok. At Tip Balls Podcast. If you're listening to this wonderful interview on Spotify or Apple Music, check us out on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. And you better ring that bell so you know when we go live. sometime around 5, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, even though it's not this Friday because we had the interview. But next week, we'll be live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, barring another interview.
Correct.
Anyways, thank you guys so much for watching. We hope you enjoyed this special edition. You guys will hear from us on Monday. AFC South offseason recap. Get ready. It's going to be a full week. We're going to get through
three divisions. And Zolo will be back.
Zolo will be back, so you won't just have to look at this.
Pumping all the Michigan stuff you can handle.
Oh, tipballs.com. Blogs, tip thoughts. Check them out. Thank you guys for watching. See you next week.